Chapter 19. Rouge. Rouge had never been the leader of a multiplayer mission before. It was both really exciting and really scary. Plus, what the heck was even going on with Miley? Once Amy was cut off from Emily, Rouge had honestly never expected to see the player again. After all, Miley was actually Amy. Wasn't she? If she wasn't, did that mean Emily really was gaining her own personality as well? Was she just another copy of Amy that was going to split off from the whole? How many times could that happen? Was she even aware of what was going on? These questions were burning their way through her mind even as she and the others discussed their plan on the way to the docks, which were on the eastern side of the city next to Lake Ada and the Don River. Miley remained silent during the entire journey, other than to whistle for her own horse, which was a black mare named Shinu, and which Rouge was absolutely certain the Avatar hadn't had before. Codswallop Shinu and Flu Flu's horse, Sophia, which was an oddly non-dramatic name because Rouge had totally expected Fluff's horse to be named Mighty Blaster, Bringer of Death or something, made excellent time crossing the 3 or 4 miles to the docks. Silas remained safely tucked into Rouge's saddlebag, so she wouldn't be buffeted by the wind. Natives and other players alike were used to seeing groups of travelers running or even jumping through the streets, so everyone just made way and paid them no particular notice. When they arrived at the outskirts of the docks, the three climbed down from their mounts. Rouge and Flu Flu began chattering about places to eat and their favorite shops, though the Chuni girl couldn't resist throwing in a few lines about robes of fire and mist and a meal fit for the great god Toko. When they reached the northern end of the docks, Rouge finally saw what she'd been looking for. The Lady of the Water was moored at one of the largest docks near the luxury district, just as Rouge had hoped. She nodded to her companions, tilting her head toward the ship, then wandered around until she found a spot where the view looked identical to what she could remember from 4D Kitten's stream. She and Fluff continued chattering about nothing while Miley lurked nearby, and Rouge watched the warehouse the two streamers had been so blatantly glancing at. After a few minutes of this, Rouge saw that a few individuals as well as small groups of players were indeed heading toward the warehouse. However, rather than entering the building itself, they would step to the side and enter what at first glance looked like nothing more than a particularly deep shadow. During the morning, with the sun shining brightly over the docks as it rose over Lake Ada, that shadow would disappear entirely, and Rouge doubted if it became particularly dark until dusk began to fall. She wondered what she would see if she looked in that spot as the sun came up. She had a suspicion that the answer would be nothing at all, or rather, a blank and innocent stucco wall. Leaning close to Fluff as if admiring the heavy golden torque the other girl wore around her neck, she whispered, "I'm going to stealth and go over there. I want to try something." Fluff nodded, buffing her necklace and smiling proudly even as she loudly announced, "This amulet was a gift from my great patron Toko for my deeds in suppressing the invasion of the insidious spider mages." Rouge stepped back into the shadow for which she had selected their current viewpoint, and after a brief glance around to be certain no one was paying attention to her, entered stealth. Thankful that she now had a high enough skill level that she could run while concealed, she raced to a spot close to the deep shadow through which so many people were vanishing. It took a moment, but soon enough a trio of chattering girls, reminding Rouge of Myrna and her cronies with their expensive gear and even more expensive custom hair mods. Veritas Online had well over 100 potential hairstyles for players, but Rouge had looked through every single one many times. It wasn't terribly expensive to import a basic change, like cutting a tattoo-like design into a shaved head, or adding some individual braids or ribbons to a ponytail, but all three of these girls had super elaborate hairstyles. Rouge thought she even recognized one as a copy of a hairdo worn by a Euro princess when she got married a few months ago. All in all, these girls were the type who would be on the docks for only one reason. A quest. They undoubtedly spent most of their time in the luxury shopping area to the northwest and the traveler zone, where the uber-rich could even buy their own homes. As she watched, the three giggled slightly nervously and stepped into the shadow not 5 feet from where Rouge was hiding. The two girls in front immediately pulled up their hoods and stepped forward into the wall, vanishing instantly. The third girl, the one with the royal dew, hesitated, looking around and biting her lip. She lifted a hand and touched the wall, which remained solid even where it was completely concealed by dark shadow. Finally, with a small resigned sigh, the girl raised her own hood. As soon the material settled around her face, she too, disappeared. Holy Frijole, Rouge thought, the hood itself is the key. Then she had to almost jump out of the way, as a figure all in black suddenly emerged from the gloom, practically on top of her. Someone else had been using the same shadow as a stealth cover. The man's hood was already up, and he hurried through the strange portal, as if he'd done it many times before. Definitely none of the hesitation shown by the girl before him. Rouge noticed in passing that his hood was trimmed in deep red, unlike those of the girls, which had been black. Rouge waited as a few more travelers went by, each of them seeming to be in more of a hurry than the one before. Each pulled up a hood as they went in, and the majority of the hoods were black-edged, though she saw one more red. The last one passed so close she almost bumped into Rouge, and the thief decided it was time to move. Full dark was nearly upon them now, so she was able to cross to her companions without having to worry about sticking to the edges of buildings. Flu Flu was still trying to involve Mai Li in conversation, but the priestess offered little more encouragement than an occasional M or I see. The look of relief in the wood elf archer's black eyes when she saw Rouge reappear was almost comical. Quickly, Rouge stepped in close. There's some kind of magical portal over there. When someone wearing a hood gets close enough, they're teleported or something. They disappear anyway, and they definitely aren't in stealth, because they'd be falling all over themselves by now. Plus, I'm pretty good at seeing through stealth and other illusions. She held out her hand, mentally calling the hoods Lyric had found in George and Leonard's house out of her inventory. I have two hoods. I could try to steal one, but even if I succeeded, it would be noticed right away, when they couldn't put it on, so that's not really a good option. We're on Bluestones here, so we can't attack somebody and take it. I think we're going to have to pick two of us to go in, and the third will stay to keep watch and let Aspen and the others know where we are if they finish their job first and come looking for us. Flu Flu looked torn. As much as I would like to accompany you, my dear friend, I must tell you that my time in this world will come to an end in only two turnings of the hourglass. I had thought this wouldst be sufficient, but if one must remain behind, it should mayhap be me, due to my sad limitations. Translation: Fluff would hit her 8-hour login limit for the day in 2 hours. While the game wouldn't log her out after that, it would start stacking debuffs on her until she logged out on her own. The first few weren't bad, but within an hour she'd barely be able to move due to exhaustion and encumbrance. 2 hours should be plenty for a quick information-gathering run, but she was right, if this turned into anything more and went over her time limit, she'd be dead weight, or Rouge would have to leave her zombie behind in enemy territory. Rouge looked at Mai Li, feeling conflicted. So far, Emily's avatar hadn't really done much after that first ritual that allowed Struthio to kill the demonic swineherd in North Goose. She mostly just hung out on the edges of the group, appearing and disappearing randomly. Ah, Mai Li, Rouge asked tentatively, are you going to be around longer than 2 hours? I know you have, a lot of stuff to do, so. Atai's priestess tilted her head, her silken waterfall of black hair falling swaying around her shoulders. The nearly white shade of her pale blue eyes seemed even eerier than usual in the darkness. I will be here for as long as I am needed, the avatar said formally. Okay. Rouge hesitated. Can you, take off your makeup? She gestured at her own face, indicating the areas where red and white makeup marked the other woman as a member of Atai's priesthood. A moment later, Mai Lei's face was clean of the identifying colors. Without the makeup, her high-necked, long-sleeved, ankle-length black dress became nothing more than a particularly plain outfit. Rouge gulped a little as she realized that she could now clearly see Amy and Mai Li. In fact, the AI's avatar looked exactly the way Bridget's best friend might if she lost 20 pounds, went full goth, and had an Asian ancestor a few generations back. Wow. Rouge cleared her throat. Yeah. Well, do you want to be the boss, or the minion? She lifted the red-trimmed mask slightly, using her body to make sure it wasn't visible to anyone but them. She would have sworn that the corners of Mai Lei's mouth twitched before the woman answered in her flat voice. The black one. I will leave the greater task to you. Rouge huffed out a startled laugh but nodded. She handed the all-black mask to Mai Li and tugged the other one over her own head, though she left it pooled around her neck and shoulders as the other players had. Looking at Flu Flu, she grimaced apologetically. I wish we had three of these things, but... The archer shook her head. I believe this may be for the best. I have also been observing those unholy, fetid vermin entering yon dark passage, and I have seen not a single member of any of the great races the gods hath placed upon this world except for humans. While you may perchance be able to conceal your own race due to your heroic calling, I am unable to do the same. Though, she suddenly struck a pose, one arm raised in challenge as the other fisted on her hip. She widened her stance and turned her face up to the sky. I will yet be here as long as I am able, ready to rid this pure world of any taint of malevolent and malicious forces. Simply call me and I shall come, upon the instant. Rouge grabbed the arm, trying to pull it down without drawing any more attention to them. Okay, okay, she hissed, relief flooding her as Fluff seemed to realize that the timing of her dramatic announcement might not have been great, and lowered her arm. We'll try to be back in less than 2 hours then. If we're not here by the time you have to go, run home and let them know what we found out, okay? For once Flu Flu simply nodded. Rouge went over to Codswallop, who was tethered with the other steeds at a hitching post nearby. As if he already knew what was coming, he gave her a long look full of resigned sorrow. His liquid eyes blinked slowly, and she wouldn't have been surprised if her ostrich somehow produced crocodile tears. Rouge cupped his beak in her hands and leaned forward to rest her cheek against his. Sorry, Wally, she murmured. There's no way you can go in there. Nobody else brought their mounts. If the door would even open for you, we'd stick out like a sore thumb. I promise I'll be back as soon as I can. Pulling several apples and a water bucket from her inventory, she placed them on the ground in front of him. Hey, what about me? Silas' little voice sounded in her mind, and she grinned, stepping around to Codswallop's side. Leaning casually against Wally's soft side as he gobbled the apples, Rouge made sure her shoulder was next to the opening of her saddlebags. The little bat's adorable fluffy face popped out of the top of the bag, quickly followed by her small, fuzzy body. The tiny creature pulled herself out with her wing thumbs, then burrowed into the mask around Rouge's neck. It stinks in here. The bat's voice sounded disgusted. Rouge wrinkled her nose, unable to smell much beyond generic waterside aroma. That's one benefit to this pod, I guess, she thought, patting the minute lump on her shoulder. Sorry, Silas. Just hang in there until we get inside. Ha ha. She tells the bat to hang in there, Silas muttered, and the two friends giggled at Rouge's inadvertent joke. When Rouge stepped back around Codswallop, Flu Flu had already taken several strides away, heading for a nearby pub with outdoor seating from which she could keep an eye on the area without seeming too out of place. Mai Li had pulled the hood up around her face, though the flap at the bottom meant to conceal her lower face was still beneath her chin. Rouge grinned tightly. Let's do this. Turning, she headed for where the shadow had been, before it was engulfed by the darkness of night. She heard soft footsteps indicating that Mai Li was close on her heels. Just before she entered what she believed was the portal's area of effect, she pulled up her own hood, then cast Substitution, using the wolf's tooth she had stolen from the last player she watched enter as an anchor for her illusion. You have cast Substitution, LV1. You now appear to anyone viewing you as the sapient being, Daydream Belly 3 Veer. This illusion will last 27 minutes, 15 base plus 12 minutes for LV12 common item Wolf's Tooth. If your theft is discovered while you have more than 15 minutes remaining on your illusion, time will be reduced to a maximum of 15 minutes. Spell will be cancelled if you take damage or if someone with a high enough illusion break skill attempts to identify you. They stepped through the portal that was now visible as a shimmering space on the wall. As the view of the docks blinked away, Rouge grinned. This was fun. The transition felt very familiar to Rouge, and she suspected that the developers had used the same code for this magic portal as they had for the stone circles at the Traveler's Guild. Since the fastest way to get around Bright or anywhere else was to use the circles, especially since they only cost 5 gold to travel within the same city or town. Most travelers use them to get around Bright, saving themselves hours of wasted time. Unfortunately, NPCs couldn't use them, and using them to go to another town was stupidly expensive, especially after you completed the tutorial, so Rouge hadn't done it since meeting Aspen. Nonetheless, she easily fell into old habits, stepping forward and walking out of the portal area as soon as she reappeared, since anyone who came after her would bump into her or even appear on top of her. While that had some hilarious results, as she well remembered from when she was a newbie, she didn't want to attract attention now. She continued moving forward, refusing to even glance behind her to make sure Mai Li had also made the transition, doing her best to look like she'd been in this place 100 times before. That was difficult since she was clearly in a temple, but it was one like none she'd ever seen before. All buildings devoted to a god were unique to that god. That held true for everything from the smallest roadside shrine to the grandest temple in Bright. Whether the signs and symbols were subtle or grand, wooden or alabaster and gold, they were everywhere in every place of worship. In that, this place was no different. However, even in temples to Kikar, who was a god of war, or Arasa, goddess of murderers and assassins, Rouge had never seen friezes and murals depicting such slaughter. Monsters raged in battlefields covered in dismembered bodies. Towns and townspeople were ravaged by twisted, enormous creatures with extra limbs and talons as long as she was tall. In the midst of the demonic creatures were men and women, fighting beside them to kill anyone who stood in their way. These people were tall, beautiful, glowing with power, and covered in glittering armor. Rouge's furtive glances, as she walked through the few stragglers who were still entering through other portals similar to the one she had used, found not a single surface that was free of some depiction of horrible death. She swallowed hard, slowing even as the others around her were picking up their pace. One masked man, his hood trimmed in virulent green, shoved hard at her shoulder and sneered as he went by. "Hurry up! If you miss the vow, you'll never make it to green." He flicked green fabric at her as if she should be overcome by this symbol of his own achievements, and then dashed off down the wide hallway. Mai Li came up beside Rouge, setting her pace to match the shorter girl's, and lowered her head, murmuring softly. "Fear not. You and I are protected by the ones to whom we have already given our oaths. There is nothing these can make us say that will sever us from that connection. We are already beyond them." She paused, then spoke consideringly. "It is, however, likely for the best that our third companion did not enter here. For all that she speaks so often of her master, her link is weak and would break with the simplest of repudiations." As she finished speaking, they reached the end of the hall, emerging into a vast chamber. The ceiling above, if there was one, was so distant that she couldn't see it, even with her dark vision. The floor was something like obsidian, but not a single scuff marked its reflective black surface in spite of the hundreds or perhaps thousands of pairs of feet that crossed it. The walls, what she could see of them, were covered with the same horrible scenes that had been depicted in the hallway. Worst of all, however, were the statues. Monsters easily 20 feet tall raised their sometimes many arms to the sky. Claws and teeth far outnumbering anything found in nature, except snails, which Rouge had been amazed to learn had thousands of tiny teeth, dripped stony gore and humanoid body parts. Rouge drew in a sharp breath, the completely absurd memory of her biology teacher wearing a snail hat and a t-shirt depicting a cartoon racing snail snapping her out of her daze. "Courage has helped you throw off the effects of shock and awe. You gain plus 10% resistance to shock and awe." "Holy moly, Jace. I'll definitely have to thank you later." Rouge swallowed hard as she looked around again, this time without the debuff clouding her vision. It was gaudy. There was so much that it just crossed the line between terrifying and vulgar, much like the decor in Aspen's house couldn't decide if it was opulent or just tacky. The monsters, now that they weren't overwhelming her, were clearly just twisted versions of regular monsters. Much like the hamster hellion they'd defeated on the way to Bloodhaven, they were bigger, toothier, more clawsome versions of simple things. She saw what looked like monstrous variants of a bunny, a fox, a squirrel, and even a giraffe, which she hadn't thought they had in Vaux. She gritted her teeth as she recognized a few critters she'd seen in sketches on the large screens during meetings of Harris's team. Oh yeah, She definitely owed that guy some surprise jalapenos in his lunch. As she moved closer to the crowd gathered ahead of her, she saw that everyone here had black-trimmed hoods. Looking around, she saw that the Reds, like her, were heading away to the left. She turned back to Miley. I think we'll stand out if we try to stay together. Will you be all right? Rouge spoke as quietly as she could, her voice drowned out by a thousand quiet conversations and the scuff of feet on stone. Miley nodded and replied simply. I am safe. Rouge nodded and started to turn away when the avatar suddenly reached out and grasped her sleeve. The thief stopped, surprised, and glanced back. Miley's dark eyes were cast down, but after a moment they flicked back up to meet Rouge's, and she seemed to smile very slightly beneath her mask. Thank you for worrying about me. Her hand fell away and Rouge just nodded, a hard lump forming in her throat. Then some newcomers pushed between them, and Rouge was on her own. Well, almost. Is she really going to be okay? Silas asked from within the folds of Rouge's hood. Rouge smiled, pulling in a bracing breath at the welcome reminder that she wasn't really alone. She joined the flow of Reds as they walked toward some unknown destination. There's nothing here that can really hurt her. She coughed a bit. I mean us. Travelers. Us travelers. Anyway, I'm sure she'll be all right. Silas' voice grew smaller. This place is scary, and these people are scary. Why are they all here? Rouge sighed slightly, feeling a little sad. Most travelers see your world as, well, a game. Nothing here really matters, so changing gods to get better boons just really isn't a big deal. Chris is definitely some kind of fighting type god, so since most travelers come here to fight, they don't see it as an issue to just, she waved a hand, taking in the milling crowd, follow whatever deity works best, even if they're kind of icky. She looked around again, taking in the enormous statues she was walking past. These were more humanoid than the first ones, more along the lines of the heroic figures who fought alongside the monsters than monsters themselves. They still had some monstrous features, like long teeth and fingernails, and even occasional wings, tails, or horns, but for the most part they looked like characters few players would hesitate to play. Many would even enjoy the inhuman features. Rouge shook her head. I haven't figured out yet what the end game is here, but I do know most PLA travelers are always looking for new, fun quests. This whole thing looks designed to draw us in. Her eyes widened. Maybe because it is. After all, her own quest had been to bring Aspen back to Bright and figure out what bad stuff was going on here. What if this was part of the quest on the other side, and she'd just managed to stumble into it? Looking around one more time, she swallowed hard. If this was the work of her opponents in Bridget's contest, it was clear that they were way ahead of her side. While she and Aspen had been lounging around playing with babies and unicorns, these guys had been recruiting what seemed like nearly every player in Bright to their side. This was not good. Suddenly, she ran full force into someone's back, and she struggled to keep her balance as she was snapped back to the present. The person she'd run into, a slim, androgynous figure in a red-trimmed hood and leathers, with a sword at their side, turned to her. Watch where you're going, a feminine voice snapped, but at the same time gloved fingers were reached out to support Rouge. Not that she needed any help, but this seemed like a good chance to get someone to talk to her. Oh, I'm sorry. She tried to sound as helpless and young as possible, raising a hand to her mouth and widening her eyes. I just haven't been over here before. I'm. The woman's posture relaxed slightly, and brown eyebrows arched over softening brown eyes, which was all that was visible above the balaclava-like mask. Nuha? I remember when I became a Red, and it was weird coming over here instead of there. Her voice was dismissive, as she waved languidly toward the masses of black trim people. Most of them won't take the second vow. Casuals, you know? She touched her own chest, am going to make it to green soon. Rouge squinted slightly, trying to be subtle about it, but the taller woman saw and laughed a little. The masks hide most of our tags, remember? Indeed, the letters SEP were all that the thief could see above her new friend's head. The other player went on condescendingly. It's actually Sephiroth. She rolled her eyes. Sephiroth 77, actually, but you can call me Seph. Not Sephi. Rouge desperately tried to recall the name she was currently using, and finally pulled up the spell icon from the corner of her vision. Substitution LV1. You now appear to anyone viewing you as the sentient being, Daydream Belly 3 Veer. Time remaining 0 hours 19 minutes and 11 seconds. You can call me Day, she said hurriedly, seeing suspicion beginning to creep back into Sephiroth's gaze at her hesitation. Sorry, this is all just so strange. I forgot for a minute. I'm usually here with some friends, but they didn't want to, take the vow. Seph huffed scornfully. Couldn't take the requirement that they offer up 10% of their mana, or didn't want to promise to be on Apophis's side in the war. A lot of players don't want to make the commitment, but I'm excited. Rouge nodded as if she were still listening, but her mind was whirling. War? What war? The war ended over a year ago. She felt like ice water was pouring over her head, and even her teeth felt cold. She remembered the scenes of devastation she'd seen on the gamer news streams, and descriptions given by people involved in the battles, who said how thrilling and realistic it was. She'd only been 12 when Veritas Online came out, and her dad had actually had her go stay with her Aunt Danica for 3 weekends straight while he played. She remembered how tired but exuberant he'd always seemed when she came home, and she'd harassed him to show her his game. Finally, he'd recorded a little of the more peaceful parts of it for her, intending to show her the shops and streets of Bright, but she'd seen something else. Everywhere he went, as he chatted about how immersive it was and how customizable everything was, she saw the NPCs in the background. There were certainly some in bright clothes, with fluttering fans and sophisticated hairstyles, but mostly there were just people. Kids like Matilda, all thin, sad faces and frightened eyes. Adults who looked terrified but determined. All of them trying to go about their lives even as their likely deaths loomed over them. It had been these scenes that had led to Rouge badgering her dad into letting her play the moment she reached the minimum age of 14. She knew he'd only relented because the war was over, but somehow, it looked like a new war was coming. A war brought on not by a trite storyline of humanity against other, but one created to pit players against players to decide something which could affect the fate of the entire world. The real world. For an instant Zoe, not Rouge, stood there in an echoing temple to an evil god, and her mental finger hovered over a button only she could see. Do you want to log out? This was too much. Too much for a 14-year-old girl who only had one real friend, and still struggled with her calculus homework. Too much for someone who just wanted to tease her dad about never going on dates, but was actually happy that she didn't have to share his attention with anyone else. Too much for Rouge? Silas' tentative voice entered her mind. I think something is happening up front. Are you okay? Rouge felt Fluff stroke her cheek as the little bat bumped her head against Rouge's jaw. Her hands fisted at her sides. Yeah. Yeah, Silas, I'm okay. She turned her gaze to the area beyond the sea of players in front of her, where indeed, something seemed to be changing. She would be okay, because she had to be. She wasn't alone, and leaving her friends behind wasn't even an option. Dramatic music seemed to swell from nowhere, and Rouge had to fight not to roll her eyes. One of the many options Vo offered was to have background music, much as non-virtual games had always done. It was considered a non-immersive option though, and was off by default. She knew lots of players liked to stream their favorite bands or even listen to the admittedly really well-done background track Veritas Corp had created for those who did want to tune in. She, however, had always tried to keep things as realistic as possible, and sudden ominous music coming from nowhere wasn't it. Honestly though, in this situation, it was really helpful. It reminded her that this was a game. Sure, it was a game with war and dear friends that she loved as if they were real, which they might be depending on what was going on with Emily, but it also had giant hamsters who tried to eat you and a background track. Plus, she wasn't Zoe Williams, loser extraordinaire here. She was Rouge the Rogue, level 49 badass, and these crazy cultists were going down. Right after this message. She chuckled to herself as she settled in to listen, though she did make sure to pin the countdown timer for her spell in her vision, so she wouldn't get distracted and forget that she was going to change from a 5'6" blonde human to a 5-foot-tall wood elf-dark elf hybrid in 16 minutes and 54 seconds. A voice echoed out over the crowd, as a platform slowly rose into the air in the center of the crowd. The platform was made of the same obsidian-like stone as the floor, but as it rose, a bas-relief scene came into view, wrapping around the circular stage. From where she stood, she could just catch the edge of a hand on the arm of some kind of throne, the rest of the body vanishing to the left, while directly in front of her were pictured more of the humanoid creatures. To her right, disappearing around that curve were the mostly grotesque monsters that seemed like twisted animals, rather than twisted people. All of the monsters were bowing. Was that kowtowing when they laid flat on their faces, or completely bent over with their foreheads touching the ground? To some degree, with of course the animal things genuflecting the most, while the more human ones simply bent deeply at the waist. Well, at least whoever designed this place was really committed to their theme. A dark figure stood on top of the stage, which was now at least 10 feet above the crowd. His robe was covered in elaborate runes, and both his hood and his sleeves were trimmed in a brownish orange that reminded her of pumpkins and wilting fall leaves. As he spoke, he held his arms above his head, and his words were projected over the still-swelling music. "Welcome, followers of our great god Apophis. We have gathered tonight for the induction of the faithful, but first, bow your heads before God and repeat your vows." His voice was rich and appealing, with well-enunciated vowels and sharp consonants. He sounded like someone who had trained in public speaking, and she wondered if he was an NPC or a player. Around her, everyone was lowering their heads, the loose folds of the top part of the hood falling forward to shadow even their eyes and foreheads. Rouge quickly followed suit. In this pose, she couldn't see the speaker, but his voice seemed somehow even more powerful as a result. "I vow to follow no god but the one god Apophis," the man on the stage proclaimed. "I vow to follow no god but the one god Apophis." Around her, everyone repeated the words, some more enthusiastically than others. Rouge did as she'd been taught in elementary school, when she'd been forced to join choir, and they'd had a concert while she was recovering from a cold that left her with a voice more like a croak than anything melodious. She muttered, so quietly that there was no way anyone could pick her words out of the crowd. "Watermelon, watermelon, watermelon. I vow to speak to no one of the will of the great god Apophis, until such time as he is ready to reveal his word to the world. I vow to speak to no one of the will of the great god Apophis, until such time as he is ready to reveal his word to the world. I vow to obey the word of the great god Apophis in all things. I vow to obey the word of the great god Apophis in all things. Reds and above, repeat after me. I vow to tithe 10% of my daily mana to the great god Apophis." The crowd to her right grew suddenly silent, and she would have sworn she felt a general sense of relaxation from the majority of the crowd in that direction. Their part was over, it seemed. Now though, those around her raised their voices higher, as if trying to prove their superiority through sheer volume. "I vow to tithe 10% of my daily mana to the great god Apophis." Rouge swallowed hard, seeing a few nearby hoods tilt slightly toward her. They were beginning to notice that she wasn't playing along. "In the coming war against the impure, I will devote my life and my death to the great god Apophis. In the coming war against the impure, I will devote my life and my death to the great god Apophis." Rouge forced the words between her stiff lips, her heart pounding in her chest. In spite of Mylay's assurance, and really, who should know better than her, that this vow wouldn't be binding on them, Rouge still felt dirty as she spoke. "In the coming war against the impure, I will devote my life and my death to the great god Apophis." "Not. Not 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 not." She screamed in her mind, fighting to relax her fists against her sides and loosen her stance. The hoods surrounding her turned away satisfied, and she slumped a bit as she heard the next words. "Greens and above, repeat after me. My body and mind belong to the great god Apophis, to do with them as he wills." Off to her left, past the small crowd of red-trimmed hoods, she heard what sounded like only 20 or 30 voices. "My body and mind belong to the great god Apophis, to do with them as he wills." "Oranges and above, repeat after me. I am the hands of the great god Apophis on this earth, and my actions are his actions, my breath his breath, my thoughts his thoughts." This time the chorus was smaller, though it still echoed through the huge room. I am the hands of the great god Apophis on this earth, and my actions are his actions, my breath his breath, my thoughts his thoughts. Rouge shuddered, abruptly feeling as if she was being watched. A pressure bore down on her shoulders, and she heard sharp, pained cries from her right as some people among the black trims suddenly found they couldn't remain standing, and their knees hit the hard floor. The pressure grew until most of the low-level cultists were bowing or lying flat on their bellies, and many of the red trims around her were crouching, though a few had given in to the first press of power and knelt in an attitude of prayer. As the heads around her dropped, she could see a few of the green trims to her left, and all of them were in a pose of supplication, and none seemed to be straining against it as the newer members were. Rouge gritted her teeth. She knew she should kneel. Knew it, and refused from the depths of her being, to do it. Even if it got her killed, that was better than yielding to this thing, whatever it was. Her knees trembled beneath her, feeling like they might break. The looming presence seemed to focus more closely on her, and she bit her lip so hard she tasted the distant tang of copper. Then she heard Silas's voice. Gina, please help us. Help Rouge. This place is really, really scary, and I'm really hungry, but there's something creepy looking at us, and we could really use some help now. Maybe some fruit too, but mostly some help. Amen. A flood of new energy filled Rouge, and she almost sighed in relief. The presence lifted, and instead, she felt surrounded by warmth and the scent of flowers. Her knees suddenly felt like buckling for a very different reason, and she went with it, falling to the floor in the midst of the sea of kneeling bodies. Gina or Bridget or whatever, thanks, she thought. Thanks a lot. A gentle hand seemed to touch the top of her head, then playfully tug one of her braids, even concealed as they were by the hood and her illusion. Oh cripes. Speaking of the illusion. She checked the timer, which was just beginning to flash at the corner of her vision. 5 minutes then. 5 minutes, and she had already attracted far too much attention with her silent battle against Apophis's domination. Grimacing, she glanced over at Sephiroth 77, who was watching her with narrowed eyes. Sorry, Rouge muttered, first time as a red. It felt different from before. The taller woman seemed to consider this for a moment, then nodded in acceptance. It gets stronger with every tier. The best thing to do is just kneel as soon as it hits. Once you're down, it lets up a lot. Rouge tried for a smile that would reach her eyes, and thought she might have barely managed something credible. Thanks, Asef. I'll do that next time. No way there's going to be a next time, though. Why would people do this to themselves? Sephiroth nodded, turning back to the speaker. As if her dismissal had reassured the others as well, everyone around them turned their attention away from Rouge. Oh my gosh, what was that? Silas asked, little voice almost panicked. Rouge shook her head minutely. I don't know, but it sucked. Big time. We'll talk about it later, though, okay? The furry lump against her throat moved convulsively, but remained silent. Ahead of them, the speaker raised his arms again. All rise! He shouted. Everyone rose, though some, probably those who had held out the longest before collapsing to the ground, groaned slightly as they did so. We will now begin the induction. Let those who would like to be raised up in Apophis's eyes step forward, that he may judge you. All eyes were now riveted on a set of stairs that suddenly formed from the sides of the stage, circling down until they, presumably, reached the ground somewhere on the other side of the pedestal from where Rouge stood. A moment later, the first of the inductees appeared, walking up the stairs with carefully measured paces. The first ones came in pairs. One regular cultist led someone else with what looked like a dark gray pillowcase on their head. The pillowcase didn't even have eye holes, so the cultist with them guided them and instructed them when to step. Substitution LV1. You now appear to anyone viewing you as the sentient being, Daydream Belly 3 Veer. Time remaining 0 hours 1 minute and 0 seconds. As the countdown continued, Rouge glanced around. Everyone's eyes still seemed to be locked on the stage, Rouge's strange behavior completely forgotten. Slowly and silently, she backed up, moving until she was at the very edge of the crowd. Glancing around again as the last 10 seconds of her spell ticked down, She saw that while there were some people with green-trimmed hoods standing against the walls, probably as guards as well as ushers, they, too, seemed focused on the central platform. The timer ticked to 1 second. No time to second-guess herself. Rouge triggered stealth. She nearly broke her own stealth, a moment later, by releasing a hissing breath of relief that was loud enough that if the room had been silent, it would have instantly attracted the attention of all those nearby. Fortunately, the ceremony was continuing, with the master of ceremonies or the priest, or whatever he was, accepting the black trim vows from each of the bagged supplicants, then replacing their pillowcases with snazzy new hood aklavas. After the second one of these started exactly the same as the first, and Rouge saw the far too long line that trailed down the staircase, she decided she could take a moment to think. First, her substitution skill was on cooldown for the next 15 minutes, so she was stuck as an elf in a room full of xenophobes for a while. Fortunately, as long as her stealth stayed on, she should be all right, and she had plenty of stamina to keep it going, though it was a noticeable drain on her reserves. Second, she still needed to know what else was going on with these maskers, and especially where the natives came into it. Vaughn's sister and nephew were still missing, and Leonard had obviously been a member, or he wouldn't have had the hoods. Leonard had definitely said that there was an induction tonight. But if everyone here was a player, where were the NPCs? Looking around, Rouge noted that not everyone had crowded as close to the center of the room as possible. There were definitely some conversations happening, probably in private messaging, which could only be sent between two people who had each other on their friends list and were standing within 20 feet of each other. She saw more than one small group watching each other rather than the MC, and a few hidden laughs and eye rolls that weren't really appropriate to the situation. It would be easy enough to maneuver around the edges of the crowd, using these groups as a cover, since they usually held themselves slightly apart from the rest of the attendees. With her small size and high agility, as well as the haste buff from Millie's cooking, she should be able to get a few more experience points in steel, legerdemain, and sleight of hand as she went. Heading left, she got started with a quick dip in Sephiroth 77's belt pouch. Yep, definitely getting back into the swing of things now. The new black trim members had been inducted, and current black trims were taking the red trim vows by the time Rouge made her way past the reds and to the back of the much smaller group of green trims. If this lot was representative of the whole, then it looked like only about 10% of each group was choosing to get deeper into the cult. So, out of 1,000 black trims, there were around 100 reds. Out of that 100, only about 10 would become green. If that held true, then only one person in 1,000 was reaching the orange rank, and even fewer would be higher than that. If you looked at it from the perspective of a military organization then, didn't that make the black trims little more than cannon fodder? If the reds were sergeants, then green would be what, lieutenants? Which made Mr. Orange up on the podium, currently taking vows from newbie reds, a captain or a major. It only made sense that there had to be people higher than him, since who sent out their generals to bring in recruits? So where were the generals? That was a lot of questions, and while Rouge liked asking questions, she wasn't a big fan of having no answers. Which was what she had right now. Bupkis, as Jace's dad liked to say. She tuned back into the ceremony as the music swelled and the orange trim priest guy's voice echoed out almost painfully loudly. Two green trims standing in front of her perked up, the private conversation that had been obvious by their intent gazes, as well as the fact that they were holding hands and leaning in so close that they looked like they were about to kiss, forgotten. The shorter figure, probably a girl, from the long flowing dress and wavy light brown hair cascading from beneath her hood, murmured out loud. Is it Para's turn now? Her boyfriend nodded. Yeah. We'll be able to group up for green quests now. Kes, you're still going to tank, right? Para will have to go through the tutorial quests, and she'll need your help. A big guy standing next to them sighed, but grunted an affirmation. Yeah, whatever. Once we have 6, we can actually finish that stupid orange qualifier test, right? Because you said it would only take 5, Raz, and here we are. The boyfriend's shoulders stiffened, but he managed to keep his voice friendly. Yes. For the last time, Kes, I'm sure. I know we party wiped last time, but those nights are tough. We need a healer, and not many of them went to Apophis, since his buffs don't help them much. Pear is good though, and she'll get us through as soon as we raise her up. The short girl elbowed Raz in the ribs.
Chish!
She's up. Only two reds stood on the podium with the orange trim MC, and one of them looked really nervous. Her hands were hidden by her long sleeves, but it looked like she was twisting them. She also kept shifting from foot to foot as she stared down into the crowd, trying to see something in what must be near darkness from where she was standing. The girl in front of Rouge raised a hand, waving vigorously until the red trim girl seemed to catch sight of the motion. The red's hands loosened and then she waved back very slightly. While all this was playing out, the MC had droned on about how important it was for each of them to devote themselves fully to Apophis, and how great these two were, and blessings, and boons, and blah blah blah. When he finally got around to actually giving the vows, it was mostly anticlimactic, though a dim dark purple glow did shroud the new green trim for a moment as he finished speaking. Then it was Para's turn, and she stepped forward hesitantly, still throwing nervous glances down toward the crowd below. Rouge wondered if she was just shy, or if there was something more going on. Then, as the orange trim raised his hand to lead the girl through her new vows, a voice rang out from the crowd. With a sinking feeling, Rouge dropped back behind everyone else, allowing for a clear view down the outside curve of the congregation. As it turned out, moving was unnecessary, because a familiar figure, gleaming with red light, was rising above the crowd as if lifted by an invisible platform of her own. Mai Li. Not only Mai Li, but a Mai Li in full, a Tai's priestess regalia. Her plain black gown now looked somehow majestic, and her silken fall of black hair hung free past her waist, gleaming in the dim light. Her face was once again covered in the ritualistic makeup that masked it in red from nose bridge to hairline, and white from nose bridge to the edge of her high-necked dress. When she spoke, Mai Li's voice was easily as loud as that of the priest of Apophis, and her lack of emotion and inflection after his almost melodramatic phrasing made her words seem even more ominous. Parabimata. You once promised yourself to the goddess Atai, she who holds us all in her cold grasp. Do you now forsake her gifts and her love? Know that she will curse your name if you choose to pursue this path any further. She has overlooked it so far since she had no voice to warn you. You have lost her favor already. Will you truly earn her wrath instead? The girl on the stage shrieked, backing away from Mai Li as if she'd been physically attacked. Her merely mortal voice was almost lost in the sudden hubbub as the guards around the edges of the room began simultaneously moving toward the intruder in their midst, and the attendees began chattering among themselves loudly. Nonetheless, Rouge could just make out the girl's babbled excuses that she was just doing a favor for her sister, and she didn't mean it. Beside Rouge, Kes swore. Did you just get a green ranked kill quest for that chick with the face paint? Look at the rewards. Let's go, guys. Raz started forward but his girl grabbed his sleeve.
No.
We have to help Para. Look. Sure enough, up on the podium, Para was being held by the orange trim guy, who now gripped a sinister-looking dagger in his free hand. The girl was struggling, and her hood had been knocked askew in the fight so Rouge could clearly see her frightened face. Raz paused, clearly torn, but finally called after the big man.
Come on, Kes. She's in trouble because she was going to help us.
We should.
Kes pulled his hood down, revealing a deeply tanned face with too much forehead and not enough chin. He sneered at his erstwhile friends.
Whatever, dude. I joined up with you guys because I thought you were in it to win it, but obviously you're not anymore. You go after Margog up there, and he'll bust you back to black.
You really want to start over?
For a girl?
Raz hesitated, looking around as his girlfriend pulled him toward the central platform. He waved toward Kes.
You do what you've gotta do, man. See you later.
The big tank just shook his head, then headed toward the mass of people already gathered below Mai Li. The priestess, for her part, was entirely ignoring the showers of arrows and magic missiles that were being cast toward her, only to ricochet off the red glow surrounding her. Rouge knew her character was powerful in ritual magic, and she must have been casting this one for quite a while, holding it until it was just the right time. That said, all good things must come to an end, and unless the AI cheated, which she either chose not to or was unable to, Mai Li would be vulnerable sooner or later.
As Rouge stared up, torn between whether or not she should sacrifice her own life to try to help, because frankly she had no chance against this crowd, no matter what nifty new abilities she'd picked up recently, the world seemed to hiccup. For an instant, everything froze. Arrows hung in the air. Margog's dagger paused in its descent toward his captive's chest, and Miley looked straight at Rouge. "Go." The voice echoed in Rouge's mind, neither frightened nor angry, as time once again began to flow normally. This was on purpose. This was all to give Rouge a chance to investigate beyond those now unguarded doors. And Rouge had never been one to let a good chance to be sneaky go by. Instantly, the thief spun on her heel, dashing through the crowd, which now buzzed like a beehive disturbed by an intrusive bear. She ran away from Mai Li and toward the farthest exit from the cavernous room. That exit was beyond even the small group of greens, and not one but two guards flanked it. "What are you doing, Rouge?" Silas squeaked angrily. "We have to help Mai Li." Rouge shook her head, running as quickly as her hasted body would take her, so quickly that if she hadn't had an absurdly high dexterity, she would have run into half a dozen high-ranking maskers as they prepared weapons and spells to repel the intruder. "She told me to go, Silas. This is the plan." Rouge twisted and rolled to avoid a ball of fire that threatened to burn her hood right off as it flew by overhead. "When was this ever the plan?" Silas nearly shrieked, as sharp little wing thumbs dug into Rouge's neck. Rouge grinned, performing a perfect front handspring with a half-twist, ending up beside the now-abandoned doorway with her back pressed to the hard stone wall. Somewhere during her run, she'd lost 3 health points, breaking her stealth, but fortunately no one was paying attention to another cultist running around in a mask and dark clothes. She didn't bother pulling up her notifications to find out where those points had gone. She'd set filters so minor notices wouldn't distract her while she was focused on theoretically non-violent information gathering. And obviously they hadn't considered whatever it was to be important. She had a suspicion, though, that a level 20-something fruit bat could deal about 3 points of damage to a level 49 foul trickster if she dug in her claws hard enough. Carefully, Rouge reached up and tugged at the soft lump under her mask until Silas took the hint and let go, though not before another hit point drained away from Rouge's pool of health. "Ouch," Rouge said gently as she snuggled Silas reassuringly. "Oh. Sorry." The bat sounded embarrassed, and Rouge had to resist the urge to just pet her for a while until she felt better. "It's okay." The short cool-down period for stealth was up. Rouge triggered it again, then knelt in front of the door, examining the lock. She was just pulling out her lockpicks when she remembered something Aspen had recently reminded her about. "Check the door before you try to pick it." She pulled her Mombele from her inventory, gripping it tightly in her right hand. With her left, she pressed the heavy metal tab of the latch down, pulling the door toward her at the same time. Silently, it swung open and she held herself still, with her back pressed against the solid wood, waiting to see if anyone would emerge from beyond. When nothing happened except a sudden increase in the sounds of battle nearby, though she couldn't make anything out in the veritable storm of projectiles that were now filling the air where Mai Li had been, Rouge slipped around the edge of the door. With a last glance toward the space the priestess probably occupied, Rouge murmured, "May Gina and Atai protect you. Just in case." She shut the door behind her.